This is Dee Blick. Welcome to Lead Well, Live Well for UK Health Radio. Hello and a warm welcome to Lead Well, Live Well on UK Health Radio, the world's biggest talk health radio station with me, your presenter, Dee Blick. Thank you for joining me. It's lovely to have your company. Now, as this is my very first show, I decided that instead of inviting on a guest, I'd use this space to share my story with you. So I want to imagine that you're at a networking event and I'm the guest speaker, charged with talking about my career and also telling you some things about me that you might not expect. Now, that should take us to the first break, but don't go away, because after I'll be talking about my journey into alcohol addiction, how it came close to really ruining my life. But thankfully, I'll also talk about my journey out of addiction and into sobriety, where I really discovered my writing talent as a published author. Finally, I'll give you a glimpse into future shows, the fabulous, authentic and relatable entrepreneurs and authors I'll be chatting to, why I've asked them to share their journey with me and with you on Lead Well, Live Well. You can contact me in between shows, and I'd love to find out what you're enjoying and how you lead well and live well, and what you think about my guests and some of the things that I'll be talking about. You just need to pop my name, Dee Blick, that's D-E-E-B-L-I-C-K, into LinkedIn and Facebook, and there I am. So let's get started. You're sitting comfortably in your seat at this networking event, and here I am in front of you. Who am I? Well, firstly, in terms of my career, I'm a fellow of the Chartered Institute of Marketing with, I can barely believe I'm sharing this, but 42 years experience as an author. And I've spent most of those 42 years working with a whole range of different businesses, ranging from global brands where they brought me in to share their story worldwide and to develop their communications, to train their marketing teams, but also small businesses, an owner with 2, 3, 4, 5 employees, and they really want to get to grips with their marketing. Latterly, because I've not taken clients on now for a couple of years, preferring to focus instead on writing books and also mentoring people. I love mentoring businesses, usually one-person businesses, where they would not usually be able to afford me. And so being able just to mentor them for no reward other than seeing them thrive with a bit of my marketing know-how, that is just absolutely magic for me. And that's where the last few years have taken me. And I've also been writing books. But what I love about being a marketer, and I went into marketing at the age of 22, I'd completed a degree in history and politics at Sheffield University. And quite a few people were asking me why I wanted to go into marketing as a career. And I just saw it as a perfect opportunity to indulge my love of writing and my curiosity. I'm one of these people that I'm always asking questions. And I've learned that in marketing, that is a really good skill to have, because often I'd be faced with a business that was either coming to me brimming full of optimism and doing really well in their business, or conversely, not doing very well at all. And they wanted the answers, and they wanted me to provide those answers. And I learned early on in my career that being curious and asking questions was the key to my success, but also to the businesses that I was working with, it was the key to their success. So I could basically unlock the answers as to why their marketing wasn't working, or I could find out what we needed to do to make them even more successful in their business. And it's been a wonderful career. It's seen me take to the stage as a professional and paid public speaker. I have to share with you that my journey into public speaking did not start with me occupying big stages of global brands. My journey began with my knees knocking and talking at networking events. But I realized pretty early on in my career that public speaking could really advance my cause. Not only could it get me known by many more businesses, but it would also lead to other opportunities to speak and to training. So I self-trained as a professional speaker. Now, I don't know if you're a natural public speaker, I certainly wasn't, or if you are now in that space where you recognize that public speaking can really advance your cause. And I would say, get some help from a local speakers group, read up as much as you can and practice. And what I have to share with you today, I hope you're still listening in the front seat, is that my practice entailed a hairbrush and a teddy bear. And I would literally be in my bedroom for hours on end, practicing in front of my teddy bear, who was a very willing recipient of my messages, and just going over and over and practicing my talks. And it was this commitment to the cause that led to me being invited to speak on huge stages at, for example, the Business Show, which is a big annual event that takes place in London, and at massive events of organisations, including the Chartered Institute of Marketing and Royal Mail, the British Franchise Association, and lots of other events where I was headlined as the keynote speaker. And I still get nervous before a performance, whether it's to a small networking group or on a big stage. I just accept that anxiety is my way of really showing that I care about giving a great performance. So public speaking has undoubtedly advanced my career, as has writing. And I discovered early on that writing was a skill that I really could improve upon massively. And I made the commitment at the age of 22 to really hone my writing skills by studying all the greats, all the great writers in business, people like David Ogilvy and Drayton Bird. And it really, again, that stood me in good stead because I began to win awards for my work, which was fantastic. I was writing for magazines, articles and press releases. And suddenly this slew of awards came my way, which was absolutely jaw-dropping. It really gave me that confidence that not only could I deliver a great service to my clients, but that I could also advance myself. And I'm going to be talking, we're going to talk about addiction, my addiction after the break, and then I'll be sharing how books have played a massive part in my career and in building my reputation worldwide. Because once you get an international bestseller under your belt, amazing things happen. But like everything, my career as an author did not begin with an international best-selling book. And I'll be talking about that more after the break. So I don't know where you are with your career. Do you have your own business? Do you work for a company? Have you made any resolutions this year that you want to switch up, maybe work for that promotion, advance your own business, make it even bigger, or even start your own business? Because all of that is both, it's exciting and it's nerve-wracking, isn't it? I still get nervous when I'm asked to do something new and unfamiliar. And now I just accept that this is part of my journey. And so it's part of yours as well, that when you truly care about something, when you've got this burning ambition, it's natural to get the butterflies. And certainly over the years, I have heavily invested in books like Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway, great book by Susan Jeffers, You Can Heal Your Life by Louise Hay. And I found myself over the years reading an equal number of self-development and how-to books, as well as reading the more traditional books that you would expect of a marketer and a copywriter, because we're complex people, aren't we? We're not just a one size fits all. And when now that brings me up to the first break. So don't go away, because afterwards I'll be talking about my descent into addiction and how it started and where it ended. And I'll obviously be talking about the books I wrote that changed my life forever.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick. It's lovely to have your company, and I really hope that over the coming months that we can actually chat and you can share your feedback, that you can message me, because I just love the idea of including your feedback in future shows. Now, before the break, I was talking about addiction. Where did my descent into addiction start? It's a good question and one that I have pondered over for more than a minute over the years. I would say that I believe each one of us, we experience that fork in the road, don't we? It's where we need to make a decision, or through no fault of our own, through no investment of our own, that decision is made for us, and it can take us onto the right path and happy days. We love the journey that we're embarking on. Or conversely, we can be shunted down a path that is anything but advantageous to our spirit, to our well-being, to our whole person. And at the age of 8, my journey into anxiety followed by my journey into addiction started. My mum and dad divorced, and almost overnight we left a lovely, comfortable home on a street where I would play with the kids until dusk in the holidays and after school. And almost overnight, we moved into a cramped bungalow on the edges of town. Me, my little brother Drew, my mum and her new boyfriend. Now, unfortunately, Her boyfriend did not like the fact that two young children came as part of the baggage with his girlfriend, and he made no secret of sharing his, probably contempt is a good word, his contempt of me in particular. I was this little precocious 8-year-old girl who probably had too much to say, most of it fueled by nervous energy. And his best way of showing his disapproval was verbal and physical insults. And at that point, that was most definitely where I can pinpoint my anxiety tipping into overload. I'd had traces of it as a young girl, but nothing as bad as it turned out to be. The upside, if there is one, of my anxiety was that I began to retreat into my room, and there I discovered my love of writing, writing stories, writing little books, and I became a voracious consumer of books for young girls. Gosh, I loved all the Enid Blyton books and C.S. Lewis and J.R. Tolkien. I absorbed books like they were going out of fashion, reading and rereading them. So there was an upside to anxiety, but my anxiety was all-consuming. And I was a young girl of the 70s, the very late 60s and the early 70s, where fundamentally children were seen and not heard. And so my anxiety became my shameful secret. I can remember having those awful panic attacks, you know, where your heart's pounding, your mouth goes dry, and you just think that something awful is going to befall you. And I managed all this anxiety, the worrying about my grades at school, worrying about what people thought about me. I managed all of this, concealing it to myself. I can remember having panic attacks, and I look back now and think, goodness me, I certainly learnt these really unhealthy coping strategies where instead of saying to my mum or my dad or the person I was with, my gran, that I was having a panic attack, I'd just abscond, I'd leave the scene. And they were none the wiser. And I'm just so grateful today that children are seen and they are heard, and that mental health is now well and truly on the menu, as it should be, that children are listened to, that they are nurtured. But of course, I carried my anxiety throughout my life and into my early teens. So when I discovered alcohol at the age of 16, it was like I'd met my best friend. It was wonderful. If I felt anxious, no worries. A bottle of wine or two would soon take the edge off my anxiety. If I was happy, even better. My alcohol would make me feel wonderful. It would make me feel unassailable. I was on top of the world. And I bought into blackout drinking, which is fundamentally where you don't know what you've said or done for several hours of your drinking spree until the next day when somebody reliably informs you that although you thought the evening had ended at 9 o'clock at night, it had actually ended at 3 in the morning. And you've got 6 hours of pretty appalling behaviour to account for. And I motored on like this for many years. My career undoubtedly aided and abetted me. I was in charge of massive budgets. And so there I was going off to London and being feted by advertising agencies that love nothing more than taking their star client out for a meal and a drinking spree. And often I would make it clear I wasn't really interested in eating. It was crack open the champagne and let's celebrate. And nobody from the agencies told me that my behaviour was outrageous. Why would they? I was spending huge sums on behalf of my client with them. They would even pay for me a taxi home with some poor member of the team escorting me. And on one particular bad evening, the team member told me the next day in the most loving of terms that it had taken the taxi driver 2.5 hours of driving around the village where I live to actually manage to prise my address from me. And I got away with this kind of behaviour for years. But if you've had a problem with addiction, or you know somebody that's had a problem or is having a problem, then you'll know that eventually your addiction bites you on the backside. It becomes demanding. It becomes the rapacious creditor. It wants payback. And what happened to me was that I became increasingly terrified of my behavior when I was drinking. And I began what we call with my husband, the control years. So I'd switch drinks. Oh, it's not that I've got a problem with addiction. It's just that I behave a bit outrageously. It's not really a problem. So if I change from wine to lager, that's the answer. I tried cutting down on my drinks, which only worked for a while before I began leveraging the volume up again and drinking more. All manner of things I tried to persuade myself that I could drink like a normal drinker, and none of it worked. And eventually I found myself at what's in 12-step circles is called the jumping off point. I vividly remember the day. It was a family event. I'd got my bottle of wine at the side of me, tucked under my chair. I'd got my bottle of wine in the kitchen so I could keep on disappearing into the kitchen in the hope that nobody would notice. But of course, when everybody else around you is stone cold sober and you're sitting at the table making great play of the fact that you're drinking water when it's absolutely clear to everybody that you're not, eventually you're called out. And I can still remember my husband, when everybody had gone home, just saying to me, "This is the end of the road for us. If you carry on like this, there's no marriage and there will be no children. I'll be taking the kids and we'll be divorcing." Now, I don't know if you have ever had that epiphany in your life where something is said to you and you absolutely at that point in time know instinctively what the right response is. And again, you're at that fork in the road and you make the right decision. You just know instinctively, intuitively, what you have to do next, even though you might not have planned it. And I found myself within literally a few minutes of my husband saying this to me, ringing a helpline and sharing to an extremely understanding person on the end of it why I thought I had a problem with alcohol. I actually naively thought he would say, "Oh, it sounds to me that you're just a bit of a heavy drinker. Just cut down." There was still that little part of me. And his answer was, "It sounds to me that you've got a big problem with drink. So I suggest you get yourself off to a meeting." And 4 days later, I found myself in a meeting surrounded by people that I have never felt such extraordinary, such extraordinary kinship with, uttering that ubiquitous phrase, "My name's Dee and I'm an alcoholic." And I have to say to you, from that day onwards, my life changed. And admitting that I was an alcoholic and that I needed help, it didn't just save my life, but it's made my life. It's made me the woman that I am today. And it's also enabled me to do so many incredible things with my life and to take it onto a different journey altogether. I started out thinking it would just be enough to get sober, to get my family off my back, to stop the horrible anxiety and the muddled thoughts and the shame and the guilt. And I realized, probably after about a year of still struggling to cope with being clean and sober in a world where I was no longer navigating my feelings with booze and squashing them or elevating them, it took me a year to realize that life was pretty wonderful. And that now brings us to the next break. But don't go away, because I'll be talking more about the books that have really shaped my life. And I'm going to be sharing with you what I've got planned in future shows.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Good. Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role, just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to Lead Well, Live Well with me, Dee Blick. It's lovely to have your company and I hope that some of what I'm saying is striking a chord with you, whether you're at a bit of a crossroads with your life, whether you have to make decisions and you need that little bit of oomph and strength to be able to make that decision with confidence. So before the break, I was talking about my descent into alcoholism, which was undoubtedly fueled by an angst-ridden childhood. And I now want to talk to you about the books I've written because undoubtedly they have helped me so much in defining my personal brand and what I stand for and opening up so many incredible opportunities. Without a shadow of a doubt, I couldn't have written a single book if I'd not become clean and sober. There is no way that my muddled thinking and my angst-ridden mind would have been able to cope with the additional task of running a business and writing books. But I'd been sober for a few years, and one of my clients just mentioned in a fairly innocuous manner after I was winning all these awards, "Dee, why don't you write a book?" Now, my first reaction was the first reaction I usually give mentally and physically when somebody suggests something that entails me stepping out of my comfort zone. It was, "No way, I can't write a book. How on earth would I cope with negative reviews? It was just not me." But once I had allowed his suggestion to percolate, I thought, yeah, actually, I would rather like to write a book. And what was one book has turned into six books. Amazingly, I wrote my first book, but I had the L plates firmly on the cover. And this was because I did not have the confidence as a published author to really assert my voice and to demonstrate I was a person of influence in the marketing sphere. But I always maintained that you have to write your first book to get to your second book, where you really do find your feet. And what happened? I wrote my second book, The Ultimate Small Business Marketing Book, and people talk about their lives being changed. And this book transformed my career almost overnight. It went viral. It became a number one bestseller on Amazon, even making it into the top 150 books, which was amazing. I think I screenshotted that about 10,000 times and sent it to everybody that I knew on an hourly basis. And then on the strength of this book, I was contacted by a big publishing group in China, CITIC Publishing, just emailed me and said, did I fancy having the ultimate small business marketing book translated into Chinese? Within the hour, they'd sent me a contract with quite a nice payment to translate the book. This was the stuff of dreams for me as a relatively unknown author, and it was such a massive vote of confidence in my work. So I've now got this beautiful yellow, black and red book. I can't read a word of it apart from the English transformation. And there's my picture on the cover. And when the publisher, CITIC Publishing, asked if I had any requests about the cover, I just said the only thing that I would really love would be to see a picture of me, so I could truly believe it was happening and it was not the stuff of dreams. You can imagine when a big box of 13 books arrived from China, it was just wonderful. It was like validation. It was proof that it actually had happened. On the back of that, I then got a paid publishing deal with another publisher. And then that became a number one bestseller, selling thousands of copies worldwide. And it was just the most exciting period of my life because I was then flooded with fabulous speaking opportunities. I didn't have to get clients anymore. They came to me. It was just absolutely wonderful. And then last year, I actually wrote my first fiction book, The Boutique, and I was able to share my story in there. I'm Becky in the second story in this short story book. So writing books has undoubtedly given me so many hyacinths for my soul. As of November, just a few months ago, I wrote my sixth book, You're the Best, How to Build an Authentic and Magnetic Personal Brand. I was so blessed that the editor of Health Triangle Magazine, which is the sister publication to UK Health Radio, the editor gave me the most beautiful review for this book. It went into the bestsellers, and now here I am sharing my story with you on UK Health Radio. I count my blessings so often, virtually every day. I realise how privileged I am and how lucky I am that all these fabulous opportunities have found their way to me. And it all started, I think, with a little dose of self-belief and of putting my anxiety to one side and accepting that anxiety and fear of failure is part of my journey. That may well be the case with you. So that's enough about me. I just want to share a little bit about what I've got planned in the coming weeks and months on my show. So every week, I'll be talking to an inspiring entrepreneur. I call them heart-led, flawed and fabulous entrepreneurs that are willing to share the great things that are going on and some of the things that they've tripped up on, because that to me is all about being relatable, isn't it? When we dare to show our vulnerability and when we dare to be relatable, we suddenly form that important human connection, don't we? And I really want my guests to be high on sharing their triumphs, but also their setbacks. I'll also be reviewing a really interesting non-fiction book roughly every 6 weeks, and I'll be bringing the author on my show. The criteria has to be it's not too big a book that it completely overawes me, but I genuinely connected with the message and I genuinely connected with the author, just as I hope that you will too. And I'll be interviewing some incredible startup businesses, people in their first year of trading, sharing the ups and downs of their journey. Now, I just really want to end today's show by flicking a switch and talking about you and where you are on your journey in life and in business, and if you are indeed leading well and living well. I would imagine that, like me and like so many other talented people, that there's so much more to you than meets the eye, that you are capable of achieving much more than you give yourself credit for, and therefore you've got lots of unexplored potential. And I really hope that you can tap into this, and that this year, 2026, sees you really connect with your magnificence. I truly believe, having worked with so many talented people, that we are capable of being muddled and magnificent and flawed and fabulous. But often we focus too much on the flawed bit, don't we? The bits that we don't quite like about ourselves. We magnify themselves. We magnify these with this great big magnifying glass, don't we? And we're quick to call out our flaws and our faults and our foibles. And yet we hide away our magnificence. We hide away our talents. So my message to you is, one, be kinder to yourself this year. Treat yourself with the same consideration that you would offer a friend that's experiencing change and growth in their business or their career, or they're going through a tough time and they need a port in the storm. Treat yourself with that same kindness you offer others, but also make this year the year where you share and talk about all the incredible things that you are accomplishing and that you are achieving. Put aside this false modesty. I find it's something that diligent, dutiful, and talented business people seem to do with such precision and flair. They're so quick to hide their talent and their light under a bushel. I want this year to be the year in which you step fully into your circle of power. This is something that I'm always saying to my, I've got a little marketing mastermind group, and I'm always saying, guys, your circle of power is always there for you. It's waiting to be stepped into. It just takes that self-belief, that putting to one side the critical voice that says you're not worthy when you well and truly are. I want to leave you with a little quote, because every week on my show, I'm going to be getting a guest to share their favourite quote with me. It could be something that their grand said or their dad, something that they've read, or even something they just noticed on a billboard and thought, wow, that really has resonated with me. So here's my little quote for today. And I've taken it from David Beeney's book, Breaking the Silence, the most amazing book on mental health that I've ever written, and I'm going to be inviting David onto my show in the next few weeks. And I love this quote. It's from a book, I think, called From the Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse by Charlie Maxey. "What's the bravest thing you've ever said?" asked the boy. "Help," said the horse. I just love that, because for me, help takes all manner of shapes, doesn't it? It can be help in putting your next big speaking engagement together. It could be help in creating that pitch so that it really is in with a winning chance of success. It could be help with your anxiety because you've got something big coming up and you need to talk it out. But once we start talking and building that circle of trust again, our circle of power gets that much closer to us. I really hope you've enjoyed today's show. Thank you again for joining me. Get in touch, and I'll look forward to sharing with you on future shows.
You've been listening to Lead Well, Live Well on UK Health Radio.